As the buzzer sounds, I slowly push open the heavy wooden door. I wait dutifully until I hear the door latch behind me. Then I tentatively wave to the nurse and wait for her to let me through the next door. This is my first time on a psych ward, med psych in this case, and I've just started my student chaplaincy at St. Mary's Hospital in San Francisco. 1996. I was a young whippersnapper then, and a little wet behind the ears. Med psych is just part of the rounds that I'm supposed to do. And in rounds, you're supposed to stop into every room and ask each patient if they would like to talk with the chaplain. I'd already done orthopedics and cardiac and post-op and the intensive care unit, but this felt different. It was those locked doors behind me. Most people were sleeping, for which I was grateful. But Leonard wasn't. I stepped in and asked if he wanted to talk, and he burst into tears. Leonard was queer, young, and suffering severely from bipolar disorder. He was trying to stay off drugs. As we shared, he told me that his Jehovah's Witness family in Alabama had rejected him when he came out about 10 years ago. And now he was slowly dying of AIDS-related diseases. No one was bringing him flowers. Now, unlike many hospital patients, Leonard was in the hospital for weeks as they were trying to manage both his bipolar disorder and his physical ailments. So I got to visit with him regularly. And with my supervisor's consent, I let go of other rounds to help Leonard through this difficult period in his life, to help him make sense of his life, and to help him reconcile with his mother. He so wanted to go back to Alabama one more time before he died. Letters were exchanged, and in the midst of that, I helped him sort out his feelings, sort out his beliefs in God, about his beliefs about life and death, making sense of it all. Now, my 10-week chaplaincy ended before Leonard could take this trip. But he stayed in touch with me, and I learned that he got to go to Alabama and made peace with his life before he died. During my chaplaincy, Leonard had asked me to memorialize him. So after he died, it was a letter from his mother that let me know that now it was my task again to be with Leonard. I was unable to find his few friends in San Francisco, but I created my own goodbye for him, laying down flowers on his behalf at the AIDS Memorial Garden in Golden Gate Park. Naively, I had thought that this experience would not serve me as a Unitarian Universalist Congregational minister. Wet behind the ears, right? And it also says a lot about my stereotypes about Unitarian Universalists. And it says a lot about my misunderstanding of the human condition that spans everything. Mental health does not discriminate. It knows no boundaries and sets no limits related to race or class or gender, sexual orientation, social location, or religion. And neither does the pain and stigma of isolation. Close to 25% of all U.S. adults have a mental illness, and nearly 50% will develop one, at least one, during their lifetime. The suicide is the second leading cause of death amongst adolescents aged 12 to 17 nationally. And in Colorado, major depressive episodes for adolescents are higher than the national average at 11%. There is no discrimination when it comes to mental health issues. So in my ministry since that time, I have been to countless psych wards and crisis centers and numerous bedsides of people just too depressed to get up. And recently, I experienced it as a parent, these mental health challenges. Free fall. That's the felt experience I had when my own son had a mental health crisis last month. The details are his story to tell, but I will share my perspective as a parent. My husband, Phil, and I are both well-educated and relatively savvy in navigating bureaucracies. English is our native language, and we are U.S. citizens. We have lots of skill and privilege on our side, and we deeply love both of our children. But try as we may, we simply could not gather the web of services that we needed around us fast enough to prevent a crisis. And this event simultaneously added to our trauma and made us eligible for more services. We are much more stable now as a family, but that is not the route to mental health services that I would recommend to anyone. Something is deeply wrong with our mental health system if this is how people can get stable again. And in the moments and days since that crisis, I have asked myself many times, what is holding me or us together? From where does my own resiliency lie? And how does my faith as a Unitarian Universalist inform me in this moment of crisis? For these are the kinds of questions ministers ask all the time. I don't fully have the answers to my own questions right now. I'm probably too close to it, so I'm sure they'll change over time. But this is what I can glean from where I stand now. Ours is a religious tradition that honors and celebrates the beauty of each individual, no matter how fragile, and seeks to promote the well-being of all. We recognize that we are all broken and never give up on the individual and collective capacity to heal. We don't throw people out when they are in crisis and most need one another. It was my experience of my own family crisis. In that experience, I was reminded of how many times you have all been there for each other. My hope and faith didn't lie in a power above, but in a horizontal web of invisible love that I've witnessed in this congregation and in other areas of my life time and again, but I have never experienced it as powerfully as this past month, which also included, as you probably know, the sudden death of my father. Like a soft trampoline that I felt would cushion my fall and gently bounce me back up in the midst of it all. That's what it felt like. And I felt like I had handholds, even if I didn't know where they would be. And I felt it from you, even when you didn't know exactly what was going on with me. And that's the nature of this kind of community love, so deep and so profound. And stepping back, I recognize the privilege in that feeling as well. But the strength of that web was even more than a connection to our common suffering or our caring capacity. But on a deep level, I recognize that my own sense of resiliency was not separate from yours. I have seen so many of you rise from your own moments of crisis, stronger and more compassionate than before. I felt that strength, even when I didn't have that strength within me. We are so profoundly interconnected, and it gave me hope when I most needed it. But there's another really important thing here. I would not be able to be telling this story today were it not for the work of our organizing team, Boulder Valley Community Action Network, or BVCAN. 7 years ago, leaders from that group approached me after their listening campaign when they talked to you. They shared that mental health was coming up as a common concern in the congregation, and they wanted to know if I would support them in lifting it up even higher and making it our priority, our organizing and justice priority. It was a courageous act to take mental health out of the shadows of people's lives in this congregation. And it has transformed our congregation as the organizing efforts have transformed our broader community. I've listened as over the course of time, the check-ins at the fellowship meetings evolved from sort of a sharing about a hard day at work to sharing, I can remember specifically someone sharing that they were on a new antidepressant and they weren't sure if it was working yet. People risking to be vulnerable, coming out of the shadows. And in that risk, not only are they transformed, but we are transformed. And I've noticed as our candles of community over the past few years have grown more tender, as some of you have shared more about your own vulnerabilities. One story at a time, we are reducing stigma. I hope we shine a little more light of hope on and self-acceptance, not only for those extroverts who share, but for those of you who would never dream of sharing. The most humbling part of my recent experience has been recognizing that the sheer force of my own mama bear love for my children was simply not enough, and that we needed far more professional support than I could have ever imagined. Sometimes all the love in the world just can't get you where you need to go. And our mental health services need to be much, much easier to access. Earlier this month, BV Can held another accountability meeting with Boulder County Public Health, and among other things, they learned that mental health is now the number one priority from the Public Health Improvement Plan for the next 5 years. And that's part of their work. This congregation was a big piece in putting mental health as a top priority in this county. We have a lot to feel really good about there. And access to mental health services is one of the priorities on that plan. What we do here matters. And in this particular moment of my life, I am so very grateful. But Leonard's story still lives with me. What I, as a virtual stranger, was able to provide him in his hour of need is nothing compared to the web of care that we create here. And I keep thinking about how many people lead isolated lives, rejected by or lacking a religious community to call home, suffering in the shadows of isolation and without hope, both in our inner cities and in our manicured suburbs. And I'm not naive enough to believe that what we do here, that we do it perfectly here. I know there are those among you who feel the chronic ache of isolation, even and maybe especially when we gather. May you know that I pray for you, whoever you are. I also know that anchoring ourselves in this liberal religious faith, we are creating something greater than basic community. A bowling league creates community too. We are intentionally weaving the fabric of humanity together out of our torn and tattered cloth. We are creating a beautiful mosaic out of fragmented lives, and all of our lives are fragmented. With our aspirations of radical acceptance, we are inviting all who join us to merge from the shadows of stigma and shame, transforming ourselves and each other and the broader community. Yesterday, 11 more people joined this fellowship at our Path to Membership class. and with each person who decides to cast their lots with us, to covenant with this kind of community. I see the web of care and justice growing, not only in its circumference, but in its strength and in its power. What we do here matters. And in this moment, I am especially grateful.